It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
You know what? I do have a small audience here at the Todd Gallery. Let's have a little noise, small audience, a little... There we go. Our very small audience is here. They're the early birds, knowing that if they get here before 9 o'clock, they just got here earlier than 9 o'clock. If you get to the Cobb Galleria for the Fall Atlanta Home Show and Outdoor Living Expo, get here before 9 a.m. this morning. And if you know the password, which is reliable at the front gate, you get into the home show. You get to the first to the radio show to watch it for a while until 10 o'clock. And then at 10 o'clock, the whole home show opens. You get to see the show for free, no admission at all. You get to see all these great booths of landscapers, supersized people over here on the corner. You've got the gutter people, the kitchen and bathroom model folks, the roofing folks, all sorts of folks. Details at fallatlantahomeshow.com. Let's do a prize pack. We have two prize packs this morning. And one of them, I'll give away right now, Paul Simon. Paul Simon, the great Paul Simon, will be coming to the Solaris Amphitheater in Lakewood September 12th. We will give away two tickets to that, a pair of tickets to Paul Simon's Homeward Bound, the farewell tour coming to Solaris Amphitheater at Lakewood September the 12th. Tickets are on sale now at LiveNation.com. But Ashley Frasca, who could win these tickets for free?
Those are awesome tickets. Caller 7.
Caller number 7, work for it, 404-741-0750, 404-741-0750. Dial carefully. We're doing this early. Don't wake anybody up. You get two tickets to see Paul Simon at Solaris Amphitheater. Let's go to the phones. No. I just cut everything off. No, I didn't. Okay, let's go to the phones now and go to Mike in Flowery Branch. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning. I really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you.
I've got a Douglas fir Christmas tree, and it was almost a perfect Christmas tree. I mean, I've never seen one that pretty, and it was like 7 foot tall. And then, we planted it back in middle of December, and it was doing great all the way through spring, most of the summer. You know, I had new growth on it, and in the last three or 4 weeks, I noticed needles falling off, and the ends are getting brown, and I said, well, maybe the heat got to it a little more, so I've been trying to water it some, because, you know, most of the spring, everything was extra wet, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I don't know what to do, if I can save it or not.
Mike, if you went out to stand close to it about a month and a half ago, if you listened real carefully, the fir, you could hear it talking to itself and saying, how hot is it out here? Do y'all know how hot it is out here? It's 90 degrees out here. I don't like 90 degrees. 90 degrees is a little hotter than I've found in California. I don't like this at all. And it started dropping leaves as a result. And that is exactly, just as you suspected, that's exactly what happened. 90 degrees, and fir trees generally say, this is not California, we don't like it here, and they will die.
Oh, so there's nothing I can do.
Move it to California. Take it where he wants to be.
Okay. We've had them before when I was a kid. We'd get, you know, small ones. We had one almost big enough to put on top of Rich's downtown.
Wow, nice.
And, I mean, they came out and looked at it, but it was actually too full for how they type of tree they wanted.
Yeah, you know? I'll be truthful. There are occasions where I see fir trees that have lasted way beyond what I thought they would. They're in just a certain environment that they get a little cooler in the summertime. They got plenty of water in the wintertime. They don't get real root rot or anything. So it would be the kind of thing that 99 out of 100 times it will fail. But there are occasions. You're right. Just like when you were a kid, they can survive and do okay. But not usually. Not usually. Fir, Colorado spruce, Douglas fir, sequoias, all those things that are just really not adapted to heat in the summertime, they're not going to do very well in Georgia.
Well, that's what happened. Well, I appreciate it very much. I enjoy your show.
Sorry to tell you the truth, but sometimes the truth will set you free. It'll set you free.
I've been trying, but it just makes you sad, though. It's such a beautiful tree.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is you're not going to waste any more money trying to plant another fir tree there, so I helped you a lot for that way. Betty is up in Doraville and joins us. Hey, Betty, good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I got a St. Augustine lawn calendar, but it does not tell me what to use. And the pre-emergent for winter weeds, what do I ask for?
Well, the reason I don't put products on the calendar is because there are just so many sometimes that I can't put everyone down. I'd feel bad about leaving somebody else. But there are two or three that you'll find very commonly. Scotts, of course. Scotts sells Halts, H-A-L-T-S, Halts. If you go to the big box stores, it's Lesco, L-E-S-C-O. If you go to Pike, Pike has a real good pre-emergent that Bunide makes. So if you just go, frankly, Betty, go to a garden center and say, I need a wintertime pre-emergent. Sometimes the bag will say, this is for crabgrass, but still, they still work for winter weeds, too. So just go to any, I would say go to Pike, certainly, they're my friends, and go to Pike and say, hey, I need a pre-emergent for my lawn for the wintertime for St. Augustine. And whatever they sell you, I bet it'll say on the side, will control winter weeds like bluegrass and chickweed and henbit, things like that, and use that.
Okay. Well, and how about fertilizer? Is any kind of fertilizer all right for it?
No. And you have St. Augustine, Betty, is that right?
Yes, yes.
Not now. St. Augustine and all grasses, but mine in particular in my front lawn, I haven't mowed it, Betty, for 2, maybe 3 weeks now because it is slowing down. All the warm season lawn grasses of Bermuda and Zoysia and St. Augustine are all slowing down, and they don't use a lot of fertilizer. They don't need a lot of fertilizer as they slow down, and so putting a fertilizer out right now is wasting money, frankly. If you're going to fertilize St. Augustine, do it in early May, I think, and another time maybe June and July.
Right. That would be fine. What kind of fertilizer am I supposed to use?
Anything that has a high first number, not 10-10-10. Not 10-10-10.
High first number.
29-3-4, 28-4-5, 28-2-2, 27-2-3. There's a bunch of them. And again, Pike has several lawn fertilizers, turf fertilizers. Go to the big box stores, they have it too. Just look for that first number being 25 or above.
Okay. Well, I just, I had been using that fertilizer that made from sewage.
Yeah, Milorganite. I do too.
Milorganite. Is that okay? Yeah.
I use it, that's what I use on my St. Augustine lawn twice this year, and it was a good-looking lawn this year. It sure is.
Okay, well, that's what I use for a lot of things, and I didn't know if I could use it for my grass or not.
You sure can.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling, Betty. It's great talking to you. 404-872-0750 gets you in to take Betty's place. James is in Decatur and joins us. Hey, James, good morning.
Good morning, Walter. I've got some potted tomatoes. And the fruits are getting really big, almost softball size, baseball size. They're really big tomatoes. But I'm starting to, the bottoms of them are starting to turn black. They're still green, but and it's only in one of the pots. All the other ones are doing really good. What could be the problem?
Blossom end rot. That's the name of the disease or the condition. And it's mostly, James, associated with moisture fluctuations in a pot, which is, you probably have come out once or twice this summer and looked at your pot and said, doggone, I need to water those tomatoes. They got sort of dry and crinkly.
And there's been a few times I've come back from work.
soggy, dry. Keeps calcium from going to the little bitty tomatoes when they're small, and that lack of calcium when they're small ends up being blossom end rot when they get a little bit larger, which is what you have now.
Okay. Just pick them off and just let the other ones grow?
Yeah, pick them off, let the other ones grow, and don't let it dry out.
Okay, thank you.
As it gets longer in the summer, of course, James, the tomatoes get bigger, so you have to water more frequently. And if you've been thinking about watering every 3 days back in June, now it becomes every 2 days in August and September because just they use so much water. They're so much bigger than they were back in the early part of the summertime. So keep an eye on them. Don't let the tomatoes dry out, and you'll be a lot better off with blossom end rot.
Okay, well, thank you.
You bet. Thanks for calling, James.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks believe that calcium, that eggshells, maybe, is the thing that you have to use. Even Epsom salts is the thing you use to prevent blossom end rot. It's such a common disease on tomatoes. And the research does not support that at all. Calcium is, yeah, part of the problem, but it's more transporting the calcium to the right place on the tomato fruit that is really important. And you can have lots of calcium in the soil and still have blossom end rot if you let the tomato dry out during the summer. Epsom salt doesn't have any calcium in it at all. It's just magnesium. And so Epsom salts on tomatoes does not prevent or cure or do anything about blossom end rot on your tomato. Moisture. There is a problem. That's what you have to worry about. Make sure your tomatoes are moist at the right time. Make sure they do not get dried out, and you won't have blossom end rot on tomatoes or peppers and melons sometimes as well. It is 717 at News Talk WSB. We'll be back tomorrow, Lawn and Garden, after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves and the lawn and garden advice you need.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want
little Paul Simon for us there.
Don't want to end up a cartoon.
Thank you, Jason. Quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. Today, the high of 88 degrees, low tonight around 70, we think. Nice and partly cloudy today. Very nice day outside, as tomorrow will be too. Mostly sunny, though, tomorrow. High of 88, low of 70 tomorrow night. Your full weekend forecast comes with 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Speaking of Epsom salts, let's go to Peg and Tucker and talk about Epsom salts on her plants. Hey, Peg, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Walter?
I'm great. How can I help?
Well, someone told a friend of mine that they should put Epsom salts around, mix it with potting soil, and mm-hmm. use it around their iris flowers. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to find out if that's the right thing to do.
No.
Okay.
I like sometimes giving answers that are one word, no, yes, or sometimes maybe, Peg. And you heard me a minute ago talk about Epsom salts and tomatoes, and Epsom salts are, it's a mineral, and it's a magnesium sulfate, that's what it is. So the magnesium in Epsom salts is good if you didn't have any magnesium in your soil. Now, for potting soil, is that where the irises are growing, did you say, Peg?
Well, they're out in the yard, but they told her to take potting soil and Epsom salts and mix them together and then replant, you know, put it around
iris. I see. If you had potting soil and the irises were in that only, then the potting soil itself, yeah, could be deficient in magnesium. And, yes, in that case, maybe some Epsom salts would be a bad idea. But in the regular soil around your garden, and Tucker, you've got plenty of magnesium in the soil there. There's no reason to put any more in, and it's not going to hurt it. I mean, my grandmother did it around, put her, you know, her foot soak. I don't know if you've ever foot soaked your foot in Epsom salts, but my grandmother did. She swore by putting it on the roses in her flower garden. So it doesn't hurt anything, but frankly, Peg, it doesn't help anything either.
Well, then we agree.
If we agree, that's the most important thing.
Thank you, Walter.
Hey, Peg, thanks for calling. 404-8, well, you know the number. I'm not going to repeat it again. I'm going to go to Jackie. We've got just a few minutes. We're talking to Jackie up and coming. Hey, Jackie, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, Jackie?
Well, I have some knockout roses that when I get new growth on them, that
yeah.
they have these little red flowers, but after they get so long, the limb just breaks off. What causes that?
No, you have too many flowers on them, Jackie, or you fertilize so nicely that they just grew so big that the new growth is heavy and weighs them down.
But the limb doesn't seem to be as strong as the original limbs are, you know, when I planted them. Like,
how tall?
They feel really hard.
How tall is the whole rose, Jackie?
About 3 feet.
Okay. And is even then the weight is enough to break a limb off of the knockout rose?
Yeah, well, the knockout, the limb is, it's more or less, it's a green one. It's not the the old brown ones, you know, and it's a green one that grows, you know. But,
yeah.
But then it just breaks off after it gets so heavy.
Wow.
So, I don't like it, so I cut them off.
Yeah, well, you, Jackie, that's what you should do. I was going to say, hey, if you don't like it, cut it off. You took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, well, it just breaks off and falls to the ground. So yeah. I just didn't know. I mean, do all knockout roses do that?
No. I think you're one of the first I've ever heard to do that. And honestly, you got the right answer right there anyway, Jackie. Just cut off what you don't like. Make the weight of the limb lighter. It won't pop off. You're fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Jackie. We'll see you soon. 404-872-0750 is the number. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after news.
It's the Lawn and Garden Show with Walter Reeves on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. It's brought to you by Pike Nurseries, your neighborhood garden center, playing in the dirt for more than 50 years. Call now with your lawn and garden questions at 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. And now, here's Walter.
It is 7:35 on a Saturday morning, a beautiful Saturday morning, and if you would like to come and see the radio broadcast today, we are broadcasting live from the Fall Home Show at the Cobb Gallery, the Fall Home Show and Outdoor Living Expo. Hundreds of vendors here, everything you could want to make your outdoor and indoor home prettier, and they're here waiting for you. You come in this morning when the show begins at 10, and you get to pay money. There's an admission fee, of course, for the Fall Home Show. But if you get to the Cobb Galleria before 9 a.m. this morning, and if you know the password, which is reliable, because we're broadcasting this morning from the Reliable Heating and Air stage, if you know the password, get here before 9 a.m., you get into the radio broadcast for free, and then into the show for free at 10 after Dave Baker talks a little bit about the Home Fix It show. And don't forget today that his show will be shortened because of the pregame show for the University of Georgia versus the South Carolina Gamecocks. That begins at 11:30 on the Home of the Dogs, News Talk WSB. I'm Walter Reeves. I'm the Georgia Gardener. I'm here to help you be more successful in your garden. Whatever question you have, whether it be about why Japanese maples. If you had a question about Japanese maples, my friend Norm Mittleiter is here, and he will answer your question while you wait about Japanese maples. Pruning, fertilizing, caring for any Japanese maple questions, Norm will be here and answer your question as well. We go to the phone. Let's see who's on the phone right now. We got Larry in Woodstock who joins us on Lawn and Garden. Hey, Larry, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Larry.
Hey, I love to hear your show. First time caller. I love to grow tomatoes and peppers, give away to friends. But my tomato plants start wilting from the bottom up, and eventually I guess it kills the entire plant. What am I doing wrong, Walt?
I can't say you're doing much of anything wrong, Larry, but one of the things we have to figure out is why it's wilting. And there, we count one, two, three things that'll cause a tomato to wilt, starting at the bottom, moving up to the top. There's one, and I'll tell you the symptoms. They're pretty easy to tell apart, reasonably easy anyway. The first one is called bacterial wilt, and bacterial wilt is when the tomato is green, but it looks like somebody poured hot water on it overnight. It just wilts down green, and then it might recover during the night, and then it wilts down the next day real green again, and by 3 or 4 days later, the whole tomato plant is dead. But the thing to observe there of bacterial wilt is that it's green and doesn't turn brown. Second wilt, fusarium wilt. Fusarium wilt is one limb here, one limb there. Sort of
That's
the
it.
Plant, you know, goes into decline just one limb at a time. And a lot of times, Larry, if you split one of the stems on your tomato plant, you'll see these brown streaks inside the limb. And that is a fusarium fungus that's infected the inside of the limb on the tomato plant.
Yes.
And the third one, just to give you another one to play with, is one called verticillium wilt. And verticillium wilt looks a little bit like fusarium wilt, and it has the streaks inside of the stem as well. But the leaves are sort of crinkled, sort of they roll up a little bit, and big blotches on the leaves, unlike fusarium, where the whole limb will sort of turn yellow and brown and wilt off. With verticillium wilt, the big blotches on the leaves first, and then the wilting after that. So you think you had fusarium, I think you said, Larry?
I think that last one was it, Walt.
Aha! See? It's just learning to observe the symptoms, learning to sort of see what you have and then figuring out what you can do about it. And, you know, quite honestly, Larry, this late in the season, there's not a whole bunch you can do because the tomatoes, you know, are sort of petering out right now. But yes, next year, I know something you can do, and that, is when you buy your tomato, look on the label and look for little letters on your tomato. And the letters usually will be VFN, and they stand for, that's a Victor Frank nematode. And so VFN stands for Verticillium, Fusarium, and nematodes are three things that you can select a tomato plant to be resistant to. So find a tomato that says VFN on the label, or VFNT, which means it's resistant to tobacco mosaic virus. And if you get a VFN or VFNT tomato variety, they will resist the disease for you without you having to do anything about it.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. So check the label. That's the best thing you can do. There's not any spray. There's no fungicide or anything like that that controls verticillium wilt. It's strictly finding a resistant plant. Heirlooms are going to be hard to find with VFNT letters on it because heirloom tomatoes just weren't resistant. That's one of the reasons they are older tomato plants, because we have improved tomatoes that are not heirloom tomatoes but are improved and have the resistance in them. So when you plant an heirloom tomato, you do take a chance that you'll have one of these diseases they're not resistant to.
I normally plant a Park Swapper.
Yeah. They usually are VFN, VFNT. Look on the label and see if I'm right.
Okay, we'll do it. And I thank you very much, sir.
I hope to hear from you again, Larry. Thanks for calling today. We'll see you soon. We've got Mary is in Cumming, wants to transplant her azaleas today. Hey, Mary, good morning.
Hey, Walter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Do you want to do the transplant today or when?
Well, I was thinking in October, early October.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But I was worried about, you know, I've got all these blooms that won't come up until next spring, and then it totally needs to be cut back by about a third. It's gotten to be almost 5 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't really sure if I should wait till after it blooms or, you know, next spring, or if it's okay to go ahead and do it this fall.
I think the azalea would be a lot happier with you, Mary, if you did it in the fall. Because in the fall, as things are cooling off, there's not nearly the demand for water from the roots. You're going to mess up the roots, you know, somewhat anyway when you dig it out. And so it's easier, I think, on the plant to transplant sometime in October, November, or December and let it recover some during the winter months. And next year, keep an eye on watering a little bit, but it should be fine. If you cut it back some this fall before you do the transplant, you won't have many flowers next year, sure. But it'll probably do fine with just a little bit of watering in the spring.
Okay, well, great. Thank you very much. I love your show.
Yeah, one of the things, Mary, let me give you a hint. If you want to transplant an azalea or a hydrangea or a gardenia, most any of the woody shrubs that people do transplant in the fall, soak it really, really good before you do the transplant. I mean, like 3 or 4 days before you do the digging. Well, just put the hose on it for, half an hour. Just let it get really good and soggy soaked. That will really make it easier on the plant because the roots will be nicely hydrated and the leaves will be nicely hydrated and the soil will be soft so you can dig it up easily. A lot of things happen good when you soak the soil real nicely before you dig things up.
Okay, and do that 3 or 4 days in a row?
Yeah,
before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in a row, but just a couple of days before you do the transplanting, before you do the digging.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right, we'll do it.
All right, good talking to you, Mary. Thanks for calling. We got Pam in Atlanta, Georgia, who wants to talk about her hydrangea this morning. Hey, Pam. Good morning.
Hey, Walter. How are you?
Hey, Pam. Doing great. What's up?
Well, I have a hydrangea at the back corner of my house. It's several years old. It used to put up beautiful blooms. And for the last 3 years, the leaves get covered in brown spots, and it doesn't put out any blooms. I put two brand new ones in the front of the house this year. Mm-hmm. They're growing, no flowers, but they've got the brown spots. So, what's wrong?
Pam, I have been asked many times, Walter, how do you prepare for your radio show on Saturday morning? Do you have to get to the station at 3 a.m. and study before you get on the air? And my answer is no. I have to get here at 6 a.m. when the little red light comes on in the studio. Or in this case, with the Cobb Gallery, I had to be here at 6 a.m. this morning. But what I do to prepare for this show is to walk around my neighborhood And when I walk around my neighborhood, Pam, I find all sorts of things. I know someone in the next day or two is going to ask me. And yesterday, mm-hmm. while I was walking around my neighborhood, I saw a hydrangea. It was covered in brown spots all over the leaves, Pam. So I thought to myself, oh, somebody's going to ask me about that tomorrow. What am I going to say about that?
Right.
The situation of this particular shrub is that it's growing in a corner where there's no air circulation at all on it. And I think that during the summer, we had a lot of rain this year, of course, and the rain wet the leaves enough that they stayed wet, didn't get any air circulation around it, and the leaves got, oh, there's two or three fungal diseases, one called Cercospora leaf spot and anthracnose leaf spot, a couple more. They get on hydrangeas when they have wet leaves, so that really is the problem. If you can fix, that would be great if you could, Pam, either to move it or to trim the shrubs around it so they don't block the air or do something like that.
Yeah. Well, the two in the front, they're just in the front of the house in a new bed, just right out there in the sun.
Yeah, they should dry out pretty quickly then.
Yeah, I know. I just don't understand it.
I'll give you something to do. You want some homework, and this is just simply right now to put it on your calendar. But next year, in early June, let's say, when the leaves have filled out and nice and green on your hydrangeas, right around the time they start blooming, put some landscape fungicide. Daconil is a common one, Pikesell. Daconil is one. Immunox is the other one, I think, that you can find at nurseries pretty easily. Immunox is another fungicide. But if you go to any nursery and just say, I need a fungicide, fungus spot killer, fungus preventer for a hydrangea, I believe they'll have something you can spray on your hydrangea. Just do it early when the leaves are green, don't have any spots on them, and prevent it for the summertime.
Okay. All right, when's the best time to prune them back?
Most hydrangeas, the blue and pink kind of hydrangeas, the July 4th is what I say. 4th of July, prune your hydrangeas.
Okay, so now that I missed July 4th, what should I do?
Now let's see what we're going to tell Pam to do. Go out to the plants and look at them, Pam, and notice that about half of the limbs are the ones that are tallest and half of them are still shorter than the tall ones.
Yeah.
Take the tallest ones out first. It's just selective pruning is what it's called. Just take the tall ones out and shorten them down about halfway down. That should give you a lot shorter hydrangea with those little shorter limbs that you leave totally alone. They'll be the ones that make the flowers next year.
Oh, okay. All right, then. I appreciate it.
Right. Pam, it's great talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll see you soon. Coming up in the next half hour, Oral in Carrollton says the deer are eating his hydrangea, and he has mimosa weed all over the place. What is he going to do about that? Evelyn is in Noonan, says her dogwoods, the limbs are dying on her dogwood, and that's making her have heartburn about that as well. You can join us, 404-872-0750. We'll be back after this.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll be covering breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts through the weekend, and the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Walter Reeves, the lawn and garden advice you need.
The mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation.
A little more Paul Simon there. Quick weather update brought to you by Ackerman Security. Today, partly cloudy today, high of 88, low of 70 tonight. Tomorrow about the same, mostly sunny. Nice tomorrow, high of 88, low 70. Your full weekend forecast comes up in 10 minutes on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. We've got Oral in Carrollton, Georgia, who joins us. Morning, Oral. How you doing?
Morning. Morning, Walter. How are you?
I'm well, sir. How can I help?
Our little subdivision has a patch of woods behind it, and it's got a family or two of deer in it. Yeah. And they just love to get into my yard and eat my oak leaf hydrangea leaves and mop head leaves and even roses. I mean, it's amazing what they'll eat. Is there a reasonable way to discourage that?
Another one of my one-word answers, Earl, no. Fence, really? And that's another one-word answer. Fencing is about the best you can do. You don't have to have chain-link fence, Earl. So think about this. If you go online, there are two or three companies that manufacture this plastic fencing. It is not the same as chicken wire exactly, but it's made out of plastic. It's about 6 feet high. And you can staple it to trees. You can put lightweight metal posts and things in the ground to make a perimeter around your backyard. If you put this fence up, the deer running into it at night just simply don't like running into things they can't see very well. And you might be able to change their pattern, change their wandering through the woods so they're no longer stopping at your house for your roses and your hydrangeas, but going to your neighbor's house and, you know, devastating their landscape. So the deer fence is a possibility. There are no repellents that weren't worth much of anything. The smell things, the soap, Irish Spring soap, none of them seem to work and stick around for very long. They work for a while and the deer get used to it, and then the deer come back.
Well, that is interesting. Behavior modification on deer.
Yeah.
That's a novel solution.
Yeah, exactly. But go online, Oral, and look for just deer fence or plastic deer fence. I think you'll find several manufacturers and may find somebody here in Atlanta who stocks it. I don't know of anybody offhand, but maybe somebody does.
Okay, I will do that. My other question is that we had some large mimosa trees for a while, and they're dead now, fortunately, but they left a lot of seeds around, and I'm just getting little seedlings around, and they're really hard to pull up. They generally, if they get to be any size at all, you just about can't get them up. That's a good way to kill them.
And I want to distinguish now between the mimosa tree seedlings, and there's a weed that we sometimes see called, not sometimes, but a lot of times see called mimosa weed, which is not the same plant at all, but they are similar to each other. But you have mimosa tree seedlings, right?
That's right. That's right.
Right. You know, honestly, or I'll mow them down. Mow them down or spray or squirt Roundup on them every once in a while, but that's really all you need to do, just to keep the foliage off for at least a month or two or three. It starves the roots and they're dead. So there's not a whole lot to do more than just chop them down, just keep them from having many leaves on them, and you'll be fine, I think, to kill the mimosa tree seedlings. But again, different from mimosa weed, which is a weed that we commonly pull up and curse in the landscapes around Atlanta. Right now, it is 7:57. We'll be back to more Lawn and Garden after news.